Blog Talk Radio.
All right, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's Renato, Tony Penichow.
And we're coming at you live with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. And tonight, I know we got a lot of stuff to talk about in MMA with the last UFC 118 card. Was not what I expected.
Who forget to that white?
Right. Tony, the boxing guy, got the correct prediction. And, James Tony, the boxer, didn't do too well.
I'm telling you, man, that was way too easy to predict. Honestly, like I said it, you know, when the first fight first got announced, and I said it leading up to the fight. Styles make fights.
Right.
James Tony would not make a good mixed martial artist. That's not his style. He's a style like he likes to beat. I'm going to be totally brutally honest when I say this, especially later in his career. He likes to be lazy in there. He likes to, you know, get in there. He's not a guy that does a lot of conditioning drills. He likes to, you know, just get into the ring when he's training for boxing. He just get in there and spar. Like they said, like, he wouldn't really do much road work anymore. He'd skip rope. Hell no. He's not with that. Hit the heavy bag and spar. That's what his training became. All he could do. And, you know, I mean, he came in out of shape. I mean, they were criticizing him for his boxing, you know, his weight, you know, being like up higher 220s and low 230s. And he was going to be in shape for this one. He came in at 237, the heaviest he's ever been. And, I mean, I was out last Saturday night, and I got a text message from some friends of mine. Tony got stopped in the first round without even landing a punch. I said, it didn't surprise me, you know?
No, he landed four or six strikes, according to this article.
Really? Well, then, apparently they must have not been too impressive.
No. Couture landed 41 of 50.
Yeah, exactly. Certain types of fighters will not make good MMA fighters, and I said James Tony is one of them because of his style.
The thing that made me want to change my prediction back in the beginning was when I started watching some of the preview clips that day, and I noticed there's all these tractor-trailer tires around. You know, when the fighters are doing their workouts, they flip over the tractor-trailer tires for cardio.
Right.
All James was doing was running back and forth across the gym, hitting the bag, hitting the guy in the ring, but he wasn't doing that type of stuff
to
slow him down and get in fighting shape.
You know, James Tony is not a guy that, you know, puts a whole lot of stock in the conditioning. The way basically he was boxing, especially the last 2 years, was slow-paced, a lot of counter-punching, where he let the other guys do most of the work. And he was just, you know, kind of hang back, let the guys get in close. You know, he would lean on the ropes a little bit, use angles. He was hard to hit with a solid punch. And then, you know, he would, you know, make his, you know, points by counterpunching. And I knew from the start, I'm like, that will not work in the type of fight where there's takedowns involved and where there's, you know, a lot of grappling moves involved. I said, that's going to be a complete and total failure. And I wasn't surprised when I got the email with the result, to be totally honest.
Yeah, well, I bet you're going to be surprised when you find out how much you got paid.
Talk to me, tell me.
$500,000 for one fight. And guess what the purse of the main event was? $96,000 for one fighter, the winner, Ed Frankie Edgar. That was for a title belt. Five rounds. Went almost all five rounds, I think. No, it did go all five rounds. And Edgar got 96,000. BJ Penn got, it doesn't say. Oh, here it is, 150,000. So it was less than half. The total card, the total main event purse was less than half of what Tony made for just getting
let's get back to this, okay? Well, let's talk money here. Now, I'm not a statistics type of guy, but I can add. So, okay, James Tony got $500,000, and I guess because he was bringing the star power to the show, which is now. Okay, he gets $500,000. The two main event guys get about $100,000 each, or $700,000. The rest of the fight is on the card. Let's just say because I know MMA guys don't make a whole lot of money. Let's just say, and I'm going to be generous here, $1.5 million to $2 million in purses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, where was this fight at?
Oh, I bet it was in Vegas. No, it was in Boston, obviously.
It was in Boston, right? Where in Boston?
At the Fleet Center.
At the Fleet Center. Fleet Center holds about what, 20,000 people?
I should know, but I don't.
Okay, let's just say 20,000 people. And I'm gonna be actually very conservative here with this number. Let's just say the average ticket was, and I know it was much more. Let's say the average ticket was $50. Okay, so 20,000 seats at $50 is $1 million.
Yeah.
Okay, what?
Plus, you know, whatever marketing or merchandising.
Merchandising, pay-per-view buys. Okay, what was the pay-per-view? $50.
$59.95, according to James Tony.
How much was it? Well, that's not according to James Tony. I'm not going to believe a word that he says. Let's just say it was $50 again. Make a nice round and even number. $50. How many buys did it get?
I don't know. That doesn't come out for another 2 days, I think.
Okay. Well, let's once again be conservative. Let's make it it's a popular sport. So if we have $50 times, we'll say, 500,000 buys. Okay, that's some zeros.
Oh, wait. Here's the actual numbers. Before I let you do the calculations. The first UFC card in Massachusetts, according to this article, drew 11,205 paying customers, producing a gate of about 2.8 million.
Okay, there's 3 million right there. That already covered the personal fighters. Okay, now you got the officials, you got to pay, you got the referees, you know, you got the workers. You have
to pay $112,000, 4% of the gate, plus $75,000 in broadcast tax. The UFC gave out 2,963 tickets for free.
Okay. Well, let's just say they made $2.8 million at the door. Okay, with paying tickets. Then you got, I'm not even going to count really concessions because we're going to say that goes more to the stadium. Okay? Then you got your t-shirts and all that. That goes back to the UFC. But now you have your pay-per-view buys. And say they had $50 at 500, say they had 500,000 bucks. Okay? That's an average number. That is how much? That is $25 million. $25 million. Fighters out of that only took, say, 1.5 to 2 million. Where did the rest of that money go?
Right in their pocket.
Do I need to say any more about one of my favorite people in this world?
Right, Dana White. No, he only has 9% dividends.
Okay, and where does that number come from?
That's because he gave up 1% to the people from Abu Dhabi when they got bought out. That portion got bought out. And then the Fertitta brothers gave up 4% each. Or 4.5% each. So it worked out to 9% from their combined interest plus 1% of Dana's interest that they sold to the Abu Dhabi people.
Yeah.
So that's why he only has 9% now instead of his usual 10%. But according to some wing nut over at the Boston Herald, he's worth $200 million.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what?
Valuation of the UFC that's false. So
I'm going to tell you this thing. There's an old adage that the people with the most money tell the biggest lies. and I'm going to actually quote a book that I have. Rich, I know you haven't read it. But it's the Great Philadelphia Sports Fan Book. It came out about six, seven years ago, written by two guys. I got to meet both of them. Hell of a nice guys. And they were talking about the guy that used to own the Eagles before, Jeffrey Lurie from Massachusetts, bought the Eagles about 15 years ago. The guy that used to own the Eagles, as soon as he bought them, and the Eagles were a losing team, he raised ticket prices. And it most people would tell you, you know, we gotta raise prices to stay competitive. He just came out and said, do I have to lose money before I raise prices? No, I don't lose money. And then looking at his, the guys would never reveal his numbers. He was like, no, I don't make any money off the Eagles. I'm depending on them for my financial well-being. And if any player takes an extra pair of socks, I'm going to charge him. So he would charge guys like Reggie White, the greatest defensive player of all time, money if he took an extra pair of socks or an extra jock strap. At the same time, what he did was, in order to kind of eat on the taxes, instead of saying he was making, say, whatever profit, he was paying an additional salary to himself. So he paid himself an $8 million a year salary just to make money.
Wow.
Yeah. What they said, the guys with the most money tell the biggest lies. And that's what I think Dana White did. Dana White had a lot of money, but he wants to prove it. He's this great, you know, white knight, and, you know, he is the all-great, and he runs this, and they put on great cards, and everything is great, and everybody loves them, and this and that. He's bullshitting you. He's making more money than he's admitting, and he basically, and every guy that we've had on here from a mixed martial arts background, Rich, now I've been doing the show for almost 3 years with you now, you've been doing it for longer than I have. Every guy we've had on here, some way affiliated with mixed martial arts, whether we're talking to some of the fighters, Ken Shamrock, Joe Lozon, Kung Lee didn't say much, but talking to guys like Bruce Buffer, any guys like that, what do they always say? Boxers make more money than you and mixed martial arts fighters. And they say,
you'd never see in a boxing match, or a boxing card, I should say, the main event title bout be less than half a total purse of one guy in a previous bout. I don't think you'd ever see that.
I don't think you have. Basically, in boxing, it goes up, you know, the rank of the main event. The main event gets the most money, and the star power guy gets the most money. The one thing UFC does, and mixed martial arts does, that I actually like, they have a winner's share, they have a loser's share. You get a fight down here, you got Mike Tyson versus Buster Douglas. Mike Tyson's going to get $10 million, Buster Douglas is going to get $100,000. And Douglas comes out and whips his ass. Mike Tyson still got his $10 million. Buster Douglas got his $100,000.
So much I like you. Tony made for the fight per second.
For all the seconds that you for the whole time he lasted.
Each second. He made $2,500.
That's not bad. But you figure when Mike Tyson beat Michael Spinks, he was making almost. What was it, like $400,000 a second? There's something ridiculous like that. But you figure he made like $20 million, and the fight lasted 90 seconds.
Yeah. Joe Lozon actually had a good night, too. He won over that guy, Gabe Rudiger, that I mentioned was on The Ultimate Fighter, and he was sucking weight, and he quit with like a pound to go. And so he started doing the other circuits, and they finally invited him back to the UFC, and apparently it was to be Joe Lozon's punching bag. And Joe Lozon got $84,000 after getting the bonus, I guess, or something. Submission of the night. $60,000 for submission of the night and $12,000 for win. And then Gabe Rudiger got $8,000 and a 30-day medical suspension.
Wow.
$8,000. And that's pretty much the lowest that anybody got.
The one thing I do like is like the winner's share, the loser's share. Because sometimes like you get, like, I've seen boxing matches, and, you know, I believe it doesn't make me happy, but I've seen boxing matches where a guy comes in just to survive. He doesn't come in there to win. He comes in there not to lose bad. He's going to lose. He just doesn't want to lose bad. And he goes, okay, you know, I'm going to put a half-baked effort out there. I don't give a shit. I'm gonna lose this fight. I'm not going to put much of an effort in. Guy hits me a few times, or I get stunned, I'll just get out, I don't care. It's like there, it's like, well, you know what, shit, if I'm in the ring, and if I'm going to definitely take home $10,000, okay, fine, no matter what I do, I'm getting $10,000. Or, well, shit, if I lose, I'm getting $5,000, but if I win, I'm getting $20,000. I'm going to fight my ass a little bit harder. That's one thing that I do kind of like. And see, in boxing, I guess it's kind of hard to give bonuses, because in a regular pay-per-view boxing match card, you're only going to show four fights. You know, you're going to show sometimes only three fights. They might give you two undercard fights and then your main event. So it's kind of hard to have a knockout of the night. It's kind of hard to have a submission of the night. You could have a fight of the night, true. But it just makes it, you know, more difficult because you have, you know, less guys to choose from in your card.
Right. Well, whatever the reasoning is, I mean, like I said, the win bonuses and the submission bonuses, I think create an environment where, you know, a guy could put together just as good a performance as someone else, and is just as well known, and he gets a bonus and the other guy doesn't. And then you get all these guys that they spend more money training than they make in a fight. $8,000? Come on, I mean, how are you going to survive with like Tony, I guess they say he trained 9 months for this fight. How are you going to survive training for a 9 month period when you get only $8,000 at the end of the fight?
You got to turn around and look at it this way. I mean, I know in the sport of boxing, a lot of these guys, before they make it the big, big, big time, you know, like the world title, multi-million-dollar pay-per-view, a lot of these guys hold down a day job. Harry Yorgi, who we had on the show, for years, he worked construction while he was still fighting. You know, he would work all day, and he told me the one time, he goes, to me, and he goes, I'm just getting in shape. He's like, I'm working, I'm swinging a sledgehammer all day. He's like, I'm training. When I go to the gym, you know, I've already done a lot of my hard work for the day. I can get in there and work on my skill. A guy, Arthur Andrews, who was a very good friend of mine down in South Philly. He was a club fighter back in the day. Tough guy. But that's what he said. Like, he worked construction for years. He goes, they're paying me to get in shape so I can fight. It's just, they're paying me so I can train so I can make more money.
Right.
That's what he always used to say. You know, he's a good guy. But a lot of these guys are going to have to hold day jobs because $8,000 ain't going to do it unless you're fighting again in, you know, a couple weeks. You get a cut, you know, you get a torn shoulder or hurt knee or knocked out or, you know, you're out for a few months, then you're screwed because you ain't going to be able to live on the $8,000.
Well, to round out that card, I just want to go through the results. First of all, the main event, Frankie Edgar versus BJ Penn. BJ Penn looks really bad. And he got beat up really a lot in the facial area. Frankie Edgar is actually a very good boxer. He showed some real talent in that boxing, but he's also an even better wrestler. So he mixed the two of those better than anybody I've ever seen against BJ Penn. And according to the UFC website, Frankie landed 94 strikes to BJ's 36. And he only got one more takedown, so he didn't even really use much of his wrestling. He had three takedowns to BJ's two. He didn't use the wrestling as far as takedowns, so he used his wrestling with reversals and getting out of takedowns, and BJ took him down twice. And it was one of the best fights I've ever watched from Edgar, and he just looked like he was full of energy the whole time. He was bouncing on his toes, even in the fifth round. And BJ looked like he just had no way to get around his offense. And BJ is one of those guys that's been around for so long. He's just ready for to give up the title hopes now, I think. Just go back to, you know, being a club fighter, sort of, you know, being the name. That just fights the guys on their way up instead of being in that title contention like some of the other guys that are younger and fresher than he is. And it just really, you know, he even had to say after the fight, I got to go home and think about retiring because, his face was so bruised up, he was actually like, he kept touching one of his teeth. Like, his teeth got knocked out.
Are you sure they're still there?
Yeah. Or he at least chipped a tooth or something because he just kept putting his finger right up on his tooth. Even before the fight ended, you could tell something bad happened there. And he had a couple black eyes. Just looked bad. Edgar didn't even look like he was touched. And, of course, we got James Toney versus Randy Couture. We talked about a lot, but we didn't talk about how the fight actually went too much. But James, like I said, didn't really land too many punches. The UFC site actually said he had zero strikes. But Couture had eight, which is different than the article I just had the statistics from, but well, when the UFC lies about how much they're worth, why wouldn't they lie about how many punches were thrown at them or strikes? Anyway, like I wrote in the report, the play-by-play that I wrote, James Toney would look like a whale out of water.
and you know what? That's what he did.
He got thrown on his back, and all he could do was do like a camel clutch. try to grab the guy around the waist, and that doesn't do anything. You know? And then he did show some good defense when Randy locked up what they call an arm triangle. And what Tony did was he put his hand on his ear so that he could dig his elbow into Randy's neck and give himself the space to breathe. And that worked for a good minute and a half, and then Randy just tightened it up, and it was over. And it was very interesting. I'd love to be able to go back and mess with the sound, because you could tell right before Randy got the choke tightened, he gave Tony some smack talk. I think he said something to the effect of "Who's a sissy now?" or something like that, you know, because Randy had, or Tony had talked so much crap before the fight. Yeah, Randy was pretty much waiting for the fight to talk his crap.
Well, now you know James is a bona fide shit talker.
Yeah.
Now, you know what his basically his comeback for losing was, right?
Oh no, I didn't hear it.
I happened to see it the other day. Somebody posted it on Facebook. I didn't read the whole thing. But James Toney, after losing the fight, you know, just doesn't want to come out and say, okay, I lost, blah, blah, blah. He has challenged Randy Couture to a rematch. He will put up the money in a boxing match.
Really? Wow.
He said, I took you on in your sport, you take me on in mine now.
Oh, so he wants to box Randy now?
Yes.
No, that'll never happen.
No, I agree with you. It'll never happen. But I think James is, you know, hoping getting this done will be basically on the fact that he puts it on a boxing card. He tries to get the crossover appeal to, you know, a lot of the UFC fans to see how their guy would do in a boxing match. And he can, you know, offer Randy, obviously, a lot more money. Randy only made how much the other night? James is offering him, you know, this would break in, that each guy would get over $1 million at least. That's his hook. That's his selling point.
Yeah, let's see how much doesn't say in this article how much Randy made, of course.
So, that's, I mean, James doesn't want to, you know, let it go and be like, all right, I lost, the hell with it, it's over. You know, well, he's like, all right, let's do a boxing match now. Let's do it there. And I don't know.
Oh, Couture made $500,000. No, a quarter of $1 million. $250,000. 3 minutes and 19 seconds worth of work. So he actually made out pretty good, too. He still made more than the two main event fighters combined, so... And they'd had 5 rounds. He only had 3 minutes. That's rough. But also, we had Kenny Florian had another loss, unfortunately. I was rooting for him, but, you know, he had a halfway decent strategy until he let, well, he didn't really let. I mean, Gray Maynard just pretty much do what he wants with his takedowns. He's so good at the wrestling and the takedowns that, he took Kenny down 5 times, and it's one of those things like we talked about a couple weeks ago with the scoring of fights, you know, how you can't really tell how they score MMA fights sometimes.
Right.
It seems to give so much weight to the takedowns that really decided the fight for Gray Maynard, when I thought it could have been a tie for Kenny, you know, because he had some good moments in the first round until he got taken down at the end. And even his trainers are saying, look, he's trying to steal the round by taking you down in the last 30 seconds. So watch out for that. And, you know, Kenny looked in his eyes at the end of the fight like he knew he lost. But I thought it was closer than they called it. And it was a unanimous decision for Gray, but he's also undefeated. It's hard to give that undefeated guy even a draw, especially after a real good performance like that. So, I mean... I hoped that Kenny would get the tie, but I also kind of knew that the way the scoring works would be impossible. But another fight that really surprised me, Demian Maia had a unanimous decision against a guy named Mario Miranda. Miranda was much taller, much more cut than him, but Demian Maia is just unbelievable with the mixed martial art, to be a Brazilian jiu-jitsu and all that. and just kept dismantling this guy's strategy. Just an unbelievable well. Also, we had a guy they call the Irish hand grenade, Marcus Davis. Got grenaded in AP. And Diaz, a great boxer, just has a lot of unconventional angles that he comes from. Looping punches and throws a lot once he gets going, once he gets warmed up. And according to the UFC, even he had 94 strikes to Marcus Davis's 52. But the other article even gives him more. It says that Diaz had 328 strike attempts compared to 203 for Davis. That might be attempts, and the UFC might be counting landed strikes, maybe. That's a discrepancy. But went to the third round, and it was a submission win for Nate Diaz. And then we had, obviously, we talked about the Joe Lauzon versus the Rudiger fight. That ended pretty quickly, 201 of the first. And Joe just totally dismantled Gabe. I guess there was some animosity between the two because I didn't realize this, but they were on the same Ultimate Fighter episode. Or at least they both were on that show. I don't know if they're on the same episode or the same season. I always thought Joe just got discovered one day after he was doing well in Boston. Apparently he was on the Ultimate Fighter. I don't think I was watching it at the time. But also on some of the lesser talked about fights, we had Andre Winner, Nick Lentz by unanimous decision, Dan Miller got a round two submission over John Salter, Nick Oshipchak got a win over Greg Soto by unanimous decision, and finally Mike Pierce beat Amosar Alves by round three submission. And then we have an upcoming card on the 15th, I just wanted to briefly mention. We have Nate Marquardt versus Mauricio Pulgares. We also have Escudero versus Oliveira, Miller versus Tebow, Pearson versus Miller, another Miller, Drywall versus Branch, Hammon versus Kingsbury, and Rich Attenito, our former guest, is fighting again. Versus Rafael Natal, Wahlberger versus Mitchell, and Foster versus Pets. This guy Pets, I just saw in a fight in Worcester, where a guy from Worcester, from the Worcester area, Massachusetts here, beat him up and lost the fight. And Forrest Pets, his nickname is the Meat Cleaver. He's 24-8 in MMA. He's fighting this guy Brian Foster, who's 15-5. But one thing that I noticed about Pets, he's got that Rocky Marciano type of style. You know, he comes in low and with the hooks and just stays in there, hangs in there. It takes the beat to give the beat. So he's an interesting fighter. I'm glad to see he's going into the UFC here because that was just a local circuit. I don't think he had any UFC experience before that, before this. So. That's on the 15th of September, and then you got to wait till the end of the month for the next pay-per-view. That's going to be a UFC fight night on the 15th on Spike TV for free. And if we go to boxing, find out the big news is actually appears that Bob Arum's son is a missing hiker now, or a climber. He's trying to climb Storm King, an 8,500-foot peak. 70 miles northeast of Seattle. And his backpack, John Arum is the name of the nephew. And Arum's he's a 49-year-old environmental lawyer and experienced climber. And his backpack was found late Wednesday at the mountain's 7,300-foot level. And the spokesman from the National Park says, it appears the pack was left there intentionally and that the gear needed for climbing was missing from it. And 12 searchers are still out looking for him, aided by two helicopters. So he's either going to be really surprised when he sees him, or he's not with us anymore.
Which is, I was sad. I mean, Bob basically left. He was doing a promotion tour. He see that happen for the first quarter. And that's kind of scary for Bob too. I mean, Bob is an older gentleman. I mean, he's in his mid to late 70s at least. And I mean, the only thing he needs to really be doing is tricking around in mountain areas. I mean, I'm sure he's tricking around the mountain areas in one team, but you know, still can't be the easiest for him.
In other news, your boy, Bernard Hopkins, is now going to fight Jean Pascal up in Canada.
I heard the rumor yesterday, once again, on Facebook. I love Facebook, you know, gives me all my updates. I was on there the other day, and I saw that it was all but agreed upon. And interesting, very interesting, because you figure Jean Pascal obviously he's got to win over Chad Dawson. But some people have gone out and they've questioned Dawson's dedication. Chad Dawson is a phenomenally talented fighter, but you will see at times in some of his fights where he kind of eases up the gas pedal. And so now he's going to get in there with Hopkins, who will be 1 month shy of his 46th birthday in this fight in December. Now here's the thing. It's like, what Hopkins are we going to see? You know, the Hopkins against Roy Jones had his moments, but there was a lot of, unimpressive moments in that, especially with the, some say the phantom, you know, low blows and shots to the head and all that good stuff. So, the thing is, can Hopkins sustain, for 12 hard-paced rounds against a 27-year-old fighter? That's going to be what it comes down to, because obviously, talent-wise and experience, you got to give it to the old man. I mean, the guy has seen everything there is to see. The problem is, sometimes you can see where he fades in there, and he's, lately in fights, like, he's been, trying to take breathers in there, and, like, even when he fought Calzaghe, he got hit with a very minor low blow, and he tried to milk it for 2 or 3 minutes just to get a breather. So... But when it comes to skill-wise, I mean, obviously he's a guy that can, pick up on a young guy's mistakes and make him pay for them.
Oh, wow, that's a story. Have you ever heard anything about this Darren Sutherland of Ireland's Olympic bronze medalist boxing?
Didn't something happen to him?
27-year-old was found dead at an apartment in Bromley last September with suicide by hanging given as the cause.
That's what I thought. Obviously.
2 days ago, it was reported that Northern Ireland state pathologist Professor Jack Crane questioned why Darren's hands were tied when his body was found. Professor Crane went further, describing the initial postmortem as wholly inadequate after reviewing the results. He wrote in a letter, the presence of a ligature, even if only loosely tied around the wrists, raises some concern about the possibility of a third party. The Belfast Telegraph reported that Crane said the postmortem included no description of the ligature found around Darren's neck, no description of how it was knotted, an inadequate description of the marks on his neck, and a lack of detail in respect to the ligature around the wrists. And he described the toxicology report as meaningless because it did not specify what drugs or alcohol were screened for. Inquest into his death was opened and adjourned last September, and a hearing is due to be held in November. After considering Professor Crane's views, the solicitor acting for Mr. Sutherland's family advised exhumation. So that's the law and order boxing for you. Ricky Hatton is going to retire, unlike Bernard Hopkins. He has renewed his license, but that's just because I renewed my license just in case one day I do wake up and think, come on, let's give it another go, is what he says. But he says, you can never say never, but if I was to put my last pound on it, I would say no, I think that's me done. And
I'm happy about that, actually. I mean, Ricky Hatton is a hell of a nice guy. He's an icon over in England. But he had a style that was pure pressure. You know, it was a heavy work rate style. He was a guy that, was easy to hit. He was very much face first.
And not only in his loss to Mayweather and his loss to Pacquiao, his loss to Pacquiao was devastating. But in some of his other fights, like, and the one that keeps coming up to me is the win over Luis Collazo, which was a very close one. He took a lot of punishment. He was hit with a lot of flush shots. I saw a picture of Ricky Manhattan in the latest Ring magazine, and let's just say he didn't look anywhere near his 147-pound weight limit.
He tried to go back and train, but it just wasn't the same as his corpse, obviously.
in his photo, in this Ring magazine, I swear he looked like he was well over 200 pounds.
But also in the news, Mike Tyson wants David Haye to fight the Klitschko brothers to become the best heavyweight boxer. He believes that David Haye has the charisma and talent to become the best heavyweight boxer around, but he still has to prove himself against the Klitschko brothers. He made his first defense of his WBA title in stopping John Ruiz earlier this year, but he has not agreed on a date with the Ukrainian-born Vladimir or Vitaly Klitschko. Instead, it looks like the fight is about to be signed between David Haye and Audley Harrison, who won the last prize fighter for the heavyweights over there in England. So he's got some good experience, and I guess they were fighting back and forth on Twitter in recent weeks, and they've since made a deal to fight each other, so they're talking a little bit of smack. Haye Harrison is expected to be offered as part of a Sky Box Office pay-per-view package that will also feature Manny Pacquiao showdown against Antonio Margarito in Texas on the same night. I'm trying to bring a little heavyweight flair to that card, I guess. But Tyson says, I cannot see Haye versus Harrison being anything other than a warm-up fight, and David does not need warm-ups at this stage of his career. He won the title fair and square in beating Nikolai Valuev and defended it well against Ruiz, so now it has to be time for the Klitschkos. They are the opponents he should be facing. That's according to the Daily Express. How does the Daily Express get Tyson? We can't.
I know, what the hell?
Tyson also says, I'm a big David Haye fan as he has the charisma and smarts to be the best heavyweight out there, but he is not going to prove that by beating Harrison. Haye needs to lighten up the heavyweight division, and he can become its savior by fighting and beating the best. That's the only way to do it in boxing. And talked about Hopkins. Let's see what we got for upcoming fights. No, he said we weren't going to do that anymore. A lot of foreigners fighting this weekend with hard to pronounce names.
But, you know, my boy Hammer and Hank Lundy came back from his first loss. 6 years later, and got himself back from the win track.
Who did he beat?
I can't access Boxrec right now, but I don't know the guy's name, but it was a unanimous decision, 10 rounds.
Cool. I know it was a guy that had a lot of fights. I got that. Over in Germany, we got a title fight for the WBA Super World Middleweight title. Felix Sturm versus Giovanni Lorenzo. Sturm is 33-2 with 14 knockouts, one draw. And Lorenzo is 29-2 with 21 knockouts. His two losses came in his last five fights, whereas Sturm's last fight was a draw, I think. No, it was his fifth. The last four fights were win, and then the last fight was a draw. He hasn't lost since 2006 against Javier Castellejo, who was 66 at the time. And then his only other loss is to Oscar De La Hoya. I didn't even know Felix Sturm fought Oscar.
Oh, you don't remember that?
No, I wasn't that big a boxing fan then, I guess.
Felix Sturm beat Oscar De La Hoya's
ass.
So he lost the fight.
Yeah. And you've never heard of a bad decision before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
Dude, this fight was in, what was it, like June of 2004. And it was on the same card as Bernard Hopkins and Robert Allen. And basically it was just tune-up fights for Hopkins and Dan Mahoney before their September fight in that year. Hopkins goes out in the first fight, dominates, wins the decision. He goes out there, and the first round, Dan Mahoney comes out, and he's hitting Sturm on everything that the Tipton think. You know, he's hitting him with body shots, you know, he's moving up and down, but you can tell, first fight at middleweight, he looked a little soft, didn't look like he was in great shape. Before about the second or third round, Sturm is hitting him at will, hitting him with jabs, backing Dan Mahoney up. Dan Mahoney was breathing out his mouth. Couldn't do a damn thing. And then they showed Hopkins at ringside, like, looking like he was playing. And, you know, figured that was like a $20 million fight he was going to lose out on if, you know, Sturm beat De La Hoya. It goes to the scorecards. Everybody had Sturm winning 7-8 of the 12 rounds. De La Hoya wins it on the scorecards.
Well, Giovanni Lorenzo is, I'm just looking at his record compared to Sturm. And his two losses came against guys with pretty decent records. Sebastian Sylvester, who was 31-3.
If I'm not mistaken.
That was what?
Wasn't that over in Germany?
Yep. For the vacant IBF middleweight title at the time, back in 2009, September of 2009. And the only other loss he has is to Raul Marquez, who was 40-3 back in 2008 when they fought.
Right there. That was an upset. You know, Marquez is not expected to win that fight. That was a title eliminator.
Yep.
And
Renzo was deducted 1 point for a headbutt in the 10th round.
I remember when Marquez got that win. Put him into the title fight.
On all cards. Yep.
But he got his ass whipped.
That was rough. But every other fight that this guy Lorenzo has had, if the guy had over 20 wins, he had at least 10 losses.
I'm sorry, Lorenzo, down in Atlantic City and the Gotti Baldemir undercard back in 06. And, you know, I mean, he whipped the guy's ass, but it wasn't the most impressive win in the world. Lorenzo's the guy that's got a lot of talent, but he's just missing something. There's just something there that's, you know, keeping him from really being great.
Well. Here's some news. The whole margarita licensing thing. Typically, there's a story here on ESPN about this official that gave it to us. Typically, to get a boxing license in Texas, all you need to do is fill out the application, provide proper medical paperwork, and pay $20. If that happens, the folks in financial services issue the license. Margarito's case, of course, is high profile. Because of that, his paperwork was flagged and sent to a guy named, get this, William Kuntz. And Margarito's case was sent to Kuntz. Despite the controversy over the license in Texas, Kuntz said he was just doing his job when he issued it. In his opinion, he went above what was necessary to review the application, which is not something he does for any run-of-the-mill applicant. The application came through the normal process, but because this was a high-profile application, they brought it to me to see what should be done. He said, he also said a few applications land on his desk, typically the ones that do involve boxers applying for licenses who are older than 36 or younger than 18. Because of the high-profile nature of this, there's been a lot of discussion in the press, said Kuntz, who has been in his position for 11 years. I've been following the issues in the terms of the revocation. We had already gotten a copy of the transcript for the revocation hearing. We listened to the license hearing in California and listened to the discussion there and the decision they made. And we received a letter from the ABC Legal Committee saying state commissions were authorized to license Margarito. So that background information was all factored into my decision, and his medical information was in order. Kuntz said his explanation for issuing the license was based on his reading of the California transcripts. In Margarito's two hearings there, no evidence was ever presented that he knew that his wraps were loaded. Kuntz correctly pointed out that the California's decision was based on the notion that Margarito should have known what was in his wraps. he says they didn't make a finding that he knew something was done improperly, just that he should have known. Said Kunst, who once denied Mike Tyson a license and can search for one following the Evander Holyfield ear bite, which, of course, Kunst knew he did. he had a piece of it in his mouth still.
The worst example I've ever seen out of you know, not licensing a fighter and out of stupidity. Let's go back to Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, and I'm trying to remember exactly when this was. It could have been either the second fight after he got out of prison, but for some reason I'm thinking it was after that. I'm thinking it was, you know, maybe doing like kind of later in his career when they had him fighting in like Tennessee a couple times.
Yeah.
And like Louisiana and all Central America state. Tyson was, you know, obviously on the comeback trail, and he was trying to get a fight in New Jersey, trying to get a fight. So he hadn't fought in New Jersey since I think he knocked out, I think it was like Hall of the Truth Williams. But no, maybe it was when he knocked up Alex Stewart in his second fight after losing to Buster Douglas. So he's on the comeback trail and trying to get a license in the state of New Jersey. New Jersey, a state at the time, was having major financial problems. The governor, who was an asshole, Jim McGreevy, denied Mike Tyson a license in the state of New Jersey. Now, just think of it this way.
Mike Tyson's fighting in your state. It's going to be a fucking event. So what's going to happen? All your casinos are going to be taxed. What do packed casinos do? They bring in the high rollers. You got high rolling people coming in to see this fight from all over the place. I mean, you're going to have, you know, celebrities coming to see this. They're going to be staying in your casinos. Your casinos are now booked. So there's revenue right there for the casinos. What are these people going to be doing? They're going to be gambling. They're going to be drinking. They're going to be, you know, taking in some of the events there. They're going to be taking in not just Tyson, but other shows. You're bringing in parking. Look at all the things, money-wise, you're bringing into your state. And just because you don't like the guy, you deny him a license. Well, this guy McGreevy came out that he ended up being kicked out, or he ended up resigning from office because he was cheating on his wife with another guy.
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a very controversial governor, too, before that.
Yeah, he was a jackass.
But in other fights, we'll just continue going down the schedule here. We got a nice matchup going on in Mexico. Omar Nino Romero, 29-3, with 2 draws, 11 knockouts, fighting Ronaldo Barrera, 27-7, with 17 knockouts, 2 draws, for the WBC light flyweight title. And an even better super featherweight match between Jorge Solis, 39-2 with 2 draws, 28 knockouts, and Francisco Cordero, who's 23-0 with 15 knockouts. That's for the interim. That's for the interim WBA super featherweight title. And, over in Slovenia, you actually have a pretty decent fight. At welterweight, we got Jan Zivek, 29-1 with 17 knockouts, fighting for the IBF welterweight title against Rafael Jakowicz. Which is kind of funny because when I went to Norwich, there was a kid in our freshman class named Jakowicz. He used to always be hit then.
Well, that's kind of a hard name not to be made fun of, you know?
Yeah, well, it wasn't because of his name. It's because of his incompetence, for the most part. He actually became one of the highest ranking guys among us when we got to our senior year, so it's kind of funny. But then we have Scotland. We go over to Scotland for a couple 12 rounders for some titles. I don't know why this was going on. This skipped over my site here. Scotland. Glasgow, Scotland. We got John Simpson at featherweight. 21-6 with 9 knockouts, fighting Stephen Smith, who's 10-0 with 6 knockouts, for the Commonwealth featherweight title. And we got a super featherweight 12-rounder between Roman Martinez, 24-0 with 15 knockouts, and Ricky Burns, 28-2 with 7 knockouts. And that's for the WBO super featherweight title. That's pretty much it until next week. So a couple things going on Sunday, nothing too spectacular.
I got something spectacular going on this weekend.
What?
Going to a wedding, just now.
It could be a fight there.
Always could be. You know, bring me in a bunch of my old college buddies, you know, could get ugly. But I'm going to go out there and school everybody in beer pong. That's my goal.
Nice.
That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm schooling people, you know. Nobody's going to be able to stand up with me. I'm going to smash everybody. That's going to be nice. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to, we'll look at it like 20 hours from now when I get the hell out of work for 3 days.
Dang.
Holy shit, I'm going to slap somebody. Oh, wait, shit, I better not say that because we had a new boss there, and he was asking me about boxing today, and I gave him the card. He said he's going to listen to the shows, and I said, John, if you're watching, sorry, I'm not talking bad about the job. Well, I say it bad enough when I'm there, so what am I trying to deny? I bitch him enough.
Well, we only
have
a few MMA fights this weekend, too. I'm just going to run those down, too. We got the Bellator Fighting Championships 27 on the 2nd. Which is today, isn't it? Today the 2nd?
Today's the 2nd, yes. What's your teammate's birthday?
We got Rocky Mountain Beatdown, CU versus CSU in Denver, Colorado. And we got Jackson's MMA Series 2 at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Art of Fighting Apocalypse 9 at the Veterans Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. World Ultimate Full Contact 16 in Portugal. That's a first. I don't ever remember reading a fight in Portugal. Optimum Fighting Championships Battle in the Palace going on Saturday. That's in Corn Palace, South Dakota. That's at the Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota, sorry. And then at the Rugby League Club in Queensland, Australia, we got UMMA 8. And that's... got some tagline. I don't even know how to read that word. And, of course, we get Fight Down in Peru, too. That's another unique one, actually. EUF 2, El Ultimo Fate 2. And Tijuana Baja, California, Mexico, we have Bicentennial in the Hexagon. That's also Saturday, put on by Lois Promotions. And Maximum Fighting Championships 4, Chile versus the World, going on in Santiago, Chile. Also on Saturday, final fight on Saturday from the Agra Center International in Memphis, Tennessee. We got Little versus Ralston for V3 fights. And on Sunday, we got a couple events in none other than Japan.
Nice.
The Gold's Gym South Tokyo Annex. We got SWAT VT X1. And we got Club Deep Nagoya Kobudo fight in Nagoya Aichi, Japan. And that's pretty much it. I think we run through all the big news already. And we might as well have a short night because we have no guests.
I'm talking about the pretty major boxing fights coming up you know, this weekend. You know, we had a postponement of the Marquez fight. Rafael Marquez.
Yeah, I put that on the blog today.
It was supposed to be coming up. That got postponed to November the 6th due to injury. It's a shame. It was going to be a good fight. Well, I'm still looking forward to it, you know, when it happens. Well, we got Samuel Peter. He's over getting ready for his rematch with Vladimir Klitschko. He's already 0-2 versus the Klitschko brothers. But he had more success against Vladimir. You know, he lost the decision, but he put Vladimir down 3 times. And they fought 5 years ago. Now, fought Vitaly, and he took a whipping. I mean, a bad one, too. I mean, Vitaly beat him up pretty bad. Stopped him in 8 rounds. They said, I don't think Peter landed 5 punches the whole fight. Now he's going to test his mettle with Vladimir again. So that'll be kind of interesting. That's coming up, not this weekend, but I believe it's next weekend over in Germany. for the Clippers draw pretty big. HBO refuses to televise it. I don't know why. I mean, it's going to get the now. Who knows? But, hey, anytime you can get a good, exciting fight, gee, you take what you can get, and hopefully there will be a market where somebody can, you know, see it. Instead of that online pay-per-view, which I think is the dumbest goddamn thing in the world, because, hey, online is getting a lot better. But come on, you know computers crash just as much as I do. You know, computers crash, and, you know, you get bad streaming, you get bad quality. Come on, seriously, what are you going to do? Have a bunch of people sit around, you know, your computer and watch a fight on your laptop with that whole 12-inch screen? Come on, you want to sit down with a nice 56-inch high-def TV, get all your buddies over, get, you know, get some pretzels, get a few beers, and sit down and really, you know, watch a good fight.
Yeah, definitely. But also, we don't want to forget our sponsors. We actually got a call from the Zions guy today, the guy that has the eBay store that we advertise. And he's not doing good, so click on the store, buy his stuff. He thinks Zions is going to fold.
Ooh.
And actually, he got a real nice story at ZionSucks.com about the latest development. There's actually a woman that works for a major news magazine. It's like, not a major one, but it's a nationwide one. And it's called The Current, I think, or Current, that Current.org. And they basically, she found out that there was this guy who, he had a deal that he made with Russell Pike, the founder of Zions, and got him to give $2 million worth of shares for setting this deal up. And this guy turned around with those $2 million worth of shares, created a company called Marvi, and then resold shares in that company, which were based primarily on shares in Zions. So there's a whole new category of people to talk to now that are related to that. And it turns out that Russell Pike was big on making that deal happen, and he got this guy Contali out there in Chicago made a deal with a company called AA Capital. And I don't know if you remember when I got sued, but one of the things that they said that I lied about or defamed them about was when I said that there was an SEC investigation into Zions. So this guy, AA Capital, was the company that he worked for that made the $32 million deal with Russell and Zions, and that whole company was investigated by the SEC. So now this woman said she's been in touch with some SEC people, and they're interested in it. And there's the Zions connection. So it wasn't a lie. It was the truth. They were investigating Zions. They didn't sue. They didn't, you know, file a case, but they were investigating Zions for sure. And they still are. So there's no way that they can prove that in court. Now, not that they've been trying to, but ZionSucks.com is now like one of my only gripe sites left, too, because the judge in Indianapolis related to the other case just went ballistic and shut down all my other good sites. So now I can focus on Zion a little more. But it's been interesting. It's getting a little, it's getting stirred up again. So keep an eye on that site. And there'll be more to come. But don't forget to click on that big link. And I actually did have one of my friends from college ask me the other day, you know, how come you're advertising Zion when they're suing you? I was like, well, this guy is a shareholder in Zions, you know. He still believes in the product for some reason, and he's trying to sell it off eBay. So, you know, he also was stuck with a lot of products when they changed hands. Now they're doing things differently. But anyway, also, we got Discipline, DISSIPLINE.com. Don't forget to check them out. PrimeAthletics.com, CageFX.com, DrinkCocaine.com. Don't snort it, drink it. Energy drink. And fightradio.info is our own website, but we like to call them a sponsor, too. Check that out. MMA Recruiter is a friend of ours, MMARecruiter.com. Check that out. And that's about it for now. It's a good 1 hour, almost on the dot.
Right.
Unless you have anything else.
I really don't. It's been kind of a slow night, and get acting a bit, and then we have it a weekend. Wish everybody a happy Memorial Day weekend. I'll be at the wedding, having a good time. You know, I'm going to dance. I'm going to dance with a horrible Caucasian. I'm going to get drunk because we're staying over, and I'm bringing a portable beer pong table and kicking everybody's heart.
All right. Well, make sure when you talk smack, you back it up with like James Toney.
Yeah, right. I will be on. This Tony will not be like James.
All right.
All right, Joel.
Until next week when we will have another guest. I'm not sure who, but we'll find somebody. We're going to sign off.
Yeah. All right, sounds good, man. Later.